I'd like to invite Al Haskell up to do an announcement.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Al Haskell. I'm a long-serving member of this church. Here to talk to you quickly, a little introduction to stewardship of the church. It is the season. And I want you to just bear with me and envision a little bit. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, Reverend Amy said that anybody could come to me and ask me what the average pledge amount is. And you can do that, and I'd be happy to share with you. From a financial standpoint, I can tell you that there are people in this church that are contributing immense effort in their time, their energy, and their action, and they don't have the financial wherewithal to contribute big dollars. There are others that can. We all come from different spots. This is no push to tell you that you're doing more or less or what have you. Just know that the church needs pledge dollars so that we can have a budget and run the organization of the church. That said, vision with me, if you will, a tree. Think of a 15-year-old tree. We're 15, right? How deep are those roots? How thick is the taproot? How much are you seeing above the ground? If you can think about the budget of this church from that image of the church, the base of it is under the ground, and that's the financial end. What you see above that is the effort that we do outwardly, both amongst ourselves and in the community. So, how thick are our branches? How thick could they be? How many shoots are coming out? What kind of fruit are we getting out of our tree? We have a tree just outside, two trees outside, two apple trees that were a gift from our high school students a couple of years. It's now, I think, the fourth year that those trees have been growing. We got our first two apples out of them last year. It takes some time. So, as you think about stewardship, as we get into it this year, talking further about it, and we're going to be very transparent about what the budget is, where the money goes, how it's spent, how it could be spent, and so forth, think about what you might do to nurture that tree. Can you mulch? Can you trim? Can you bring fertilizer? Can you bring rays of hope and sun? What can you do? Thanks.
Our opening words today come from the movie Groundhog Day. Phil Connors, a weatherman, awakens to discover he is somehow reliving February 2nd, Groundhog Day. The same song, Sonny and Cher's I Got You, Babe, is on the radio and is followed by the same banter he has heard before. He meets the same people in the hallway. When he comes down to the breakfast area to get coffee, he meets Mrs. Lancaster, the owner of the bed and breakfast he is staying at, and just as he previously has. Phil says, "Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?" And Mrs. Lancaster replies, "I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen." Please take a moment to greet those and re-greet those around you. The same sun burns each day. The same moon turns its face to us and then away. The same water falls and rises to fall again, falls to rise again. We are sheltered under the same roof. The same fire that lights the chalice is lit in us. Please stand as you are willing and able and join me in the opening hymn, number 22, "Dear Weaver of Our Life's Design."
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Erin Johnston, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey, and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Whether you woke up this morning to Sonny and Cher's "I Got You, Babe," or Wisconsin Public Radio's "On the Media," or to that special kind of softening quiet that the snow makes, we welcome you. Whether this is your first time here, or it seems just like your first time here, or even if you aren't sure if you are here now, we welcome you. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. And today's order of service will include announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to all of our visitors, friends, and members joining in. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. And again, we welcome you here this morning, and we are very pleased and grateful that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we care for our wider community is by contributing to our local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this time or hand them to a child, and I invite the children to come forward and hear a story.
Good morning, everybody. Do you guys know what today is? It's a massive celebration. I mean, did you all get your presents and put up your Groundhog Day stuff? Well, I dug through some old things and I found a Punxsutawney Phil. So I put him up there on the altar to remind us that today is the very important holiday of Groundhog Day. So our story today is called The Debate in Sign Language. And it's a traditional story. It was adapted by Sid Lieberman, Hughes Moyer, and Joy Gasta. So once there was this evil king who decided that he wanted to throw all the Unitarian Universalists out of his country. Not a bad idea in some ways. And the way he planned to go about it was to have a debate with them in sign language. He said to the UU community, "I will give you three signs, and if someone can read my three signs and answer them correctly, you can stay here for the rest of your days. But if not, all of your people have to go." Well, the UU community was up in arms. Nobody knew what to do. There were arguments and discussions, and no one wanted to take the responsibility, not even the minister, for handling the debate. After all, how could they debate a king, let alone do it in sign language? How many of you know sign language? Excellent. You guys would be good to have. So finally, after days of arguments back and forth, Mr. Smith, the little man who took care of the churchyard, said, "Look, if no one else will do it, I will." So they agreed. And off Smith went to the debate. Now, a huge platform had been set up in the center of town, and everybody gathered around it. The king was on one side, and Mr. Smith was on the other. "Remember," said the king, "I will give you three signs, and if you get them all correct, you and your people can stay in this land. If not, you will have to leave." So here's the first sign. The king threw his arm up into the air and put his hand out, fingers outstretched. Well, Smith looked at him, and he put a fist up in front of his face. The king said, "Correct! I'm amazed. All right, here is the second sign." He threw his arm toward Smith with two fingers stretched out, and Smith put one finger up in front of his nose. The king said, "Correct again. Get the third sign right, and all your people will be able to stay." So the king reached into the fold of his robes and pulled out a piece of rare mushroom. You're going to have to imagine this. I didn't want a mushroom in my pocket. So it's the rare mushroom. Mr. Smith looked at the king, shrugged, and he reached into a pouch he had, and he pulled out an egg. The king said, "Correct again. The UUs can stay." So that night, in the castle, the whole court gathered around the king, and they said to him, "What was that debate about?" You all know what it was about, right? The king said, "It's astonishing that the UUs had a man who could read my signs. First, I put my hand out with all my fingers extended to show him that the UUs were scattered and few in number. And he put up his fist to show me that they were united in their religious principles. Then I put up two fingers to show them that there were two kings, one in heaven and me, the king on earth. And he put up one finger to show me that we were all part of the same universe. And finally, I brought out a rare mushroom to show him that the UU religion is odd and rarefied. And he brought out an egg to show me that it was vital and growing. It's truly amazing. Meanwhile, at Smith's house, everybody had crowded into the living room and they said, "What was that debate about?" Smith said, "You know, I don't know. I don't even know. I mean, I didn't even realize it had started. He reached out and tried to grab me, so I put out my fist to show him that I would punch him if he touched me. Then he put out two fingers to poke my eyes out, so I put up one to block him. Then, I guess he knew I was going to stand up to him, so he brought out his lunch. I brought out mine. So, you see, although you have to work hard to establish trust with people, sometimes trust comes in unusual ways. So, who can be our lantern bearer today? I will pick you. So, yes, you can come on up. And will you please help in singing the children out to their classrooms? The younger kids are going out to the classrooms. The high schoolers are going to stay in the service. And please help in singing the children out. We will sing "Go Now in Peace." The words are printed in your order of service. As noted in our order of service, our collection today is for the local food pantry. Loose cash will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with the food pantry and LCUUC donation amounts noted on the memo line or on an envelope. As Al has noted, this church is a community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. The gifts of the congregation will now be gratefully received. Thank you.
This is a time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
Hi, I'm Joanne, and wanted to light a candle of joy for Sam, turning 18 this week, one of the first babies here at our church, she and Ellen, so both adults now, and also for finishing up her career at Arrowhead High School.
I'd also like a candle of joy for Sam. I met Sam on a wonderful loud ride Christmas Eve when our church did not have a Christmas Eve service, and we traveled down to Miquantico. And we often talk about our saplings, our youth and their strength, but sometimes it's more evident the strength that these youngsters have from an early on stage. That said, all facetiousness aside, proud of you, Sam. Know how great a person you are.
Hi, I'm John. Please light a candle of, I hope, joy, past concern with our Reverend Amy Shaw having had such a severe case of the flu that she had to be hospitalized. My understanding is she's home now, and so that may the candle also represent hope that she continues to recover quickly and fully.
I'm Jerry. Please light a candle of joy. In spite of what the groundhog says, spring is coming. I heard a chickadee singing this morning.
My name is Fran, and if you could please light a candle of sorrow over the passing of Pete Seeger, and may the legacy he leaves behind inspire all of us to help make the world a better place.
My name is Terry, and I too am lighting a candle of joy for Sam. I had the honor of being her mentor for a short time, but anyone who hasn't met Sam, if you want to just be filled with joy by her wild, intuitive smile, please do go up and just say hello. She has the heart of, I know it sounds trite, but of true joy and happiness, where if you would ever want to find true religion, it is in her kindness.
We will also light a final candle for the joys and concerns which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
At this point, I invite Lynn Smith to come forward.
Morning. I have the honor and delight to introduce one of our high school seniors, Samantha, more commonly known to me as Sammy, and maybe to others as Sam. There's O'Neill's room. If you don't know Sammy, well, she's the one who always has a smile on her face and a twinkle in her eyes. Sammy may not realize how much her smile and good nature has touched many of us over the years, and how important smiles are to everyone's everyday life. I had the pleasure to host one of Sammy's birthday parties a few years ago as part of our church auction, and I witnessed firsthand how much Sammy is able to bring joy to the lives of her friends and to all those around her. Sammy just turned 18 a few days ago, and I hear there's a birthday cake out in the social hall so we can celebrate with her. And she's been here, as Al alluded to, ever since she's been, ever since this church was formed 17 years ago. So if you do the math, which isn't too hard, we've held her in our hands since she was 1 year old. So think about it. She's been through all that our RE program offers. She's been through our many ministers and our many buildings, and she's still smiling. Sammy's participating in our senior transition program, which is an optional independent program. Since she's heading to Paraguay for the next semester, she'll not be here in April when the rest of our high school seniors will be leading the service. And she's graciously offered to share her faith statement with us today. This takes a lot of courage to do, so thanks, Sammy. And thank you for bringing a few things for the chancel table that have been meaningful to you. There's a scarf with a volunteer Ice Age Trail logo, and I'm not sure what the box is, but thank you. I'm sure it has a lot of meaning for you.
Hi. Okay, so for a while now, I've been contemplating my beliefs and what I have faith in. And as for faith, I am still struggling with that one. It would be so comforting to me to believe in a God and know that once you die, you have a lovely, shiny, white place to go to. And all you have to do is follow a few simple rules that are really just kind of common sense. I have tried to believe in God, but I don't think I can. But I do feel certain there is a certain form of energy. I just don't think that energy is all-knowing or powerful. To be honest, I don't like giving my beliefs a lot of thought, because if I know what happens when I die, it'll kind of take the fun out of what happens. I like the mystery of death and all the different theories. It fascinates me. As for what I have faith in, that is easier to answer. I have faith in overall human good. I think that humans are generally good, not all of us, and I definitely think our goodness comes out at different times. And for some of us, it takes longer, but deep down, we are all good. Some of us have just been misguided. While I was at leadership camp this summer, they taught me about youth empowerment. They told us that we are what the future was going to be, and if we wanted to change, then we should make it happen. That experience taught me to have faith in the youth, and more importantly, myself. I can do great things in this world and not just sit around worrying about what it has come to. While at leadership camp, we stayed at the colleges in Beloit, or we stayed at the dorms in Beloit College. While being there, I met many people who had lived amazing lives, and that experience changed me. After coming back home, I decided to do something cool with my own life. Leadership camp taught me that if I wanted something, I should go get it, not just sit around waiting for the opportunity to come my way. This church has changed me so much. It's what allowed me to even enjoy something like leadership camp. To have a place to come to every Sunday where people love you and are actually interested in your life is beyond words. Because of this church, I know there will always be people who love me and want the best for me. I have grown up in this church, and our community makes me want to be a better person. So because of leadership camp and all the support and encouragement I get from this church, I am leaving to do a semester abroad in Paraguay in 2 weeks. Then I will be going to Ripon College and majoring in global studies. I wanted to end with a quote I really liked that seems to sum up my thoughts about our faith, or my faith, and the world. The Dalai Lama once said, "Our prime purpose in life is to help others. And if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them." This is something I hope to live my life by. And I'd like to thank my mentor, Terry Copeland, for her encouragement and support. Thank you.
I'd like to ask the family's mentor, Terry, to come up here. Thank you, Terry, for sharing yourself with Sammy this year. And I know with Skype and technology, you can continue to be in touch while she's in Paraguay. And I'm sure that you're gaining as much from this experience as Sammy is. Would you like to say a few words?
Just as Sammy's faith statement was simple, so will mine be. You can tell by her faith statement that she is just such an amazing person in her growth and appreciation and gratitude, and does reflect so much what we are all about, but what the world should be all about. And I am so proud to have a little special relationship with her. But for me, this is just the beginning. It's the start of a lifelong relationship with people like Sam, but especially Sam. And I'm not being at all simplistic to say that I am so gifted and honored to have her in our life when we had her in all or any of the RE classes. She just always shone out as one who connected with everyone and anyone, but especially those who seemed to maybe need a little lift. And maybe it wasn't that she sought out the lonely and sorrowful, but her smile just always brought brightness and kindness. So the proverbial, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine," is just Sammy. So we are all inspired to be little Sammy's.
And just a few words of departure, Sammy, which are actually the lyrics of the song that we're going to sing to the rest of the high school seniors in April. So we'd like to hold you close for one moment more, hold you close before you soar. Take a look around. May you have dreams, may some come true, may you build a life that's full for you. Take a look around. May the sun shine down on you. Bet there'll be a few clouds, too. Take a look around. If you don't know which way to go, take a breath and take it slow. Take a look around. This UU home will be here for you. When in doubt, we'll see you through. Take a look around. And be sure to join us when you come back. Sammy will miss you. Have safe travels in Uruguay or Paraguay. Bringing your smile south of the equator. Take care and thanks for sharing with us today. We have a little gift for you if you'd like to come up too. LCUC chalice that can hopefully bring to Paraguay. All right. Thank you.
Well, this song's completely inappropriate now. That was the exuberance of optimism of youth, where this is supposed to be for Groundhog Day, so it's the jadedness of middle age. So the high school students just want to talk to each other and pay attention. It's just kind of about the space between intentions and actions, what we wish to be. You guys all turn out exactly as you plan now. But the space between what we wish to be and what we actually become. So, and I thought I could with the Groundhog Day theme because it's sort of about making the same errors to do it in your mind again and again and again. I hope you can't relate to this, but I suspect some of you probably can.
Lord's one true religion. He's the thing I could understand, God. He's the thing I have, he's one with the cosmos. He's the thing you think it wasn't that hard. Now I'm thinking I'm it. I did my hair never get so fat. Egotistical, much more than mystical. Maybe I should think about that. I used to think I could keep it simple. Then in the cabin, read great books. Find a way to care for the planet. Used to think it was all it took. Used to think I could get it together. Used to think I'd be patient and kind. Used to think I could live life slowly. Used to think I'd find peace of mind. Now I'm thinking I'm ready. Did my head ever get so fat? I'm thinking, could be a problem. Maybe I should think about that.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Sammy, Samantha, Sam. I have a brief reading. In Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the ship called the Heart of Gold is approaching an alien planet which fires two missiles at it. Just moments before the missiles would destroy the ship, the infinite improbability drive is engaged to take evasive action, and this results in one missile being turned into a sperm whale, and the other becoming a bowl of petunias at a very high improbability level. It is important to note that suddenly, and against all probability, a sperm whale had been called into existence several miles above the surface of an alien planet. And since this is not a naturally tenable position for a whale, this innocent creature had very little time to come to terms with its identity. This is what it thought as it fell. The whale. Ah, woo, what's happening? Who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose in life? What do I mean by who I am? Who am I? Okay, calm down, get a grip. Oh, this is an interesting sensation. What is it? It's sort of a tingling in my, well, I suppose I better start finding names for things. Let's call it a tail. Yeah, a tail. And hey, what's this roaring sound whooshing past when I'm suddenly going to call my head? Wind. Is that a good name? It'll do. Yeah, this is really exciting. I'm dizzy with anticipation. Or is it the wind? There's an awful lot of that now, isn't it? And what's this thing coming toward me very fast? So big and flat and round. It needs a big, wide-sounding name, like ow, ounge, round, ground. That's it, ground. Ha! I wonder if it'll be friends with me. Hello, ground. Curiously, the only thing that went through the mind of the bowl of petunias as it fell was, oh no, not again. Many people have speculated that if we knew exactly why the bowl of petunias had thought that, we would know a lot more about the nature of the universe than we do now. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our centering hymn, number 301, Touch the Earth, Reach the Sky. I'd like to see a show of hands on how many of you own time machines. It's more than I thought. So, if you drove your time machine to church today, thank you for coming to today. It's probably better that none of the rest of you admit to having a time machine, because we know, you know, the kids will want to borrow it. We've seen Back to the Future. And so, you know, little pitchers have big ears, so mum's the word. I have always loved the idea of time machines. Science fiction has used them for ages, and if you combine a time machine with a spaceship, that is even more amazing. You can then go both anywhere and anywhen. So two of my favorite time machine spacecrafts are Doctor Who's TARDIS, which, because its chameleon circuit is broken, looks like an ordinary 1960s-style London police call box, and the spaceship called the Heart of Gold from Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which, not to bog us down in the science of time travel too much, is fitted with an infinite improbability drive, which is way cooler than the Star Wars with their ion drives and hyper jumps and Star Trek with its warp speed. I'm just saying. Without a time machine, we consider the past immutable. Whatever has already happened cannot be changed. But the idea of time travel opens the question, what if I could change the past? What would I change? What could I change? And what would happen to the universe if the past could be changed? Movies like Back to the Future, The Terminator, and 12 Monkeys all play with this theme. Some people have proposed that all possible variations of the universe exist at once, that every choice option that could be made in fact happens or is happening. Do all possible worlds exist? Perhaps. And could we travel to them? Perhaps. But that's not what we're going to talk about. Even though that's not what we're going to talk about, I want you to hold that thought. So some of you at this point are no doubt looking at your order of service and saying, it says here that the sermon is called Trust Me by Reverend Tony Larson, and I'm not sure how time machines and the existence of all possible worlds fit into that. And some of you may have previously gone to the LCUUC website and seen today's sermon listed as Groundhog Day coming round again and again and again by Reverend Amy Shaw. I'm sure that somewhere in the infinite possible variations of this day, Reverend Amy Shaw is giving her Groundhog Day sermon. In another, I am presenting the sermon called Trust Me by Reverend Tony Larson. And in another, Salvador Dali and the Dalai Lama are riding unicycles and teaching us about topiary. In the imagination, there is an astounding number of possibilities. For instance, back on Tuesday, when today was the future, and I had just learned that I would be taking care of this service, I thought I might give a sermon on being prepared. That is what I wished I was right then. And it seems we ought to be, and since we certainly know that things change and the world turns and time waits for no man and so forth. However, in the version of today, the one that is happening right now to you, I am not presenting Trust Me. Instead, I am asking you to trust me and letting you know that we are going to be talking about Groundhog Day, both the day and the movie. And I think I will title this talk, How Oracular Rodents and a Movie Might Make You a Better Person. So trust me, everything we have said is already related to Groundhog Day. Now hold that thought. I'm going to save you a lot of reading with a single quote, just a huge amount of reading. In 1905 through 1906, the philosopher, essayist, poet, and novelist George Santayana published a 5-volume book called The Life of Reason. In volume 1, Reason and Common Sense, he wrote, quote, "Progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve, and no direction is set for possible improvement. And when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." Although we may not remember who said it? Santayana. Most of us know that last line, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Some variation on that. For our purposes, I want to highlight the following. First, memory is important. Without it, we cannot make judgments and choices that will lead us toward a future goal. Without it, we're not time machines. We only live in now. Second, progress is not simply change, but directional change, the ability to steer toward a specific future. Third, our concept of progress assumes that we can influence change, that the future is mutable, and not a fixed outcome from previous causes dominoing on through the universe, that we can make choices. Fourth, Santayana is somewhat off mark in his statement, quote, "When experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual." Let's just drop that "as among savages," as even well-adjusted, well-educated, middle-class suburbanites, marketers, insurance salesmen, computer administrators, engineers, hippies, bankers, CEOs, farmers, hairdressers, teachers, and politicians, etc., can and do fail to retain experience. Santayana is chiding us with this phrase, among savages. He's not giving us a way to say, oh, since we're not savages, this doesn't apply to us. And lastly, I would drop the words "are condemned" and simply say that those who cannot remember the past repeat it. Only an outside viewer with both a historical memory and a critical opinion of that memory might be led to say that repetition of the events is a kind of punishment. I would not say that all of those stuck in a cyclic set of events, a repeated history, would feel condemned. They might feel quite comfortable instead. In fact, even with memory and recognition that they are caught in a cycle, they might still feel comfortable. For example, it's Sunday again. You're here again. Are you unhappy with that cycle? Are the seats uncomfortable? Now hold that thought. Flipping back to time machines, I want to say these two things. Each of us is a time machine. Memory and our ability to reason and set goals based on memory is the engine for our time machine. So let me expand on that. We move in time, granted, only in one direction toward the future, but as Santayana indicates, we have a capacity for remembering the past. And this capacity allows us to drive ourselves toward a specific future. Although we cannot change the events of the past, we can form our own opinion and goals for the future based on the patterns we have experienced. Okay, you say. I get it. We're time machines. But being single-directional, aimed at the future, we can't go back in time and change things. We can't jump back to, say, Sunday, June 28, 1914, in Sarajevo, and keep Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie from being assassinated by the Black Hand, and thus, in theory, keep World War I from occurring. We can't jump back to Vienna in 1907 and support a young Adolf Hitler in becoming a painter, and thus avert World War II, and so forth. So it seems that in comparison to time machines like the TARDIS and the Heart of Gold, being a kind of time machine ourselves is, well, kind of lame. And I agree. Our imagined time machines do seem way cooler. This is because the imagination has an unlimited special effects budget. But add these two additional pieces of information. One, you really exist. The imagined time machine does not. Working with a real time machine yourself has real effects. And two, we don't know what the shape of time is. We commonly think of it in linear terms, the past behind us, single point of now, and the future in front of us. But we also commonly see time as cyclical. And if time is cyclical, then our past is not only behind us, but in front of us, and thus mutable, able to be changed. Hold that thought. Now stop me if you've heard this one before. Three people arrive at the gates of heaven, a Wiccan, a Unitarian, and a Wisconsin Northwoods hermit. Now, as always seems to be this case, as the case in this type of joke, St. Peter stops them at the pearly gates and tells them they can enter only if they can answer this question. What is Easter? Now stay with me here, trust me. This is a sermon about Groundhog Day. So the Wiccan steps forward. That's easy. Easter is the holiday in November where everybody gets together, they eat turkey, and they're thankful. No, says St. Peter. I'm afraid that's Thanksgiving. You cannot enter. He turns to the Unitarian and asks the same question. What is Easter? Unitarian takes a few moments to think. There were some RE classes on this back in the day. And he finally says, Easter is the holiday in December when we bring a tree inside and we exchange presents and we celebrate the birth of Jesus. No, says Peter, that is incorrect. Is it the birth of Martin Luther King or Gandhi then? Asks the Unitarian. No, says Peter, and you only get one chance to answer the question. He turns to the Wisconsin hermit from the Great Northwoods and asks, do you know what Easter is? Oh, yeah, there, hey, don't you know, says the certain hermit. I know what Easter is. It's the Christian holiday that ties with the Jewish celebration of the Passover. Jesus and his disciples, they were eating the Last Supper, and one of the disciples, he betrays Jesus to the Romans, who hang him on a cross where he dies. He is taken down and he is buried in a nearby cave, which is sealed with a big rock. St. Peter smiles with great delight. The hermit continues, every year at Easter, the rock is rolled aside, and Jesus comes out. And if he sees his shadow, there will be six more weeks of winter. You don't have to hold on to that thought. Groundhog Day, the day, according to the all-knowing internet, Wikipedia, and other sites, is a celebration which began as a Pennsylvania German custom in southeastern and central Pennsylvania in the 18th and 19th centuries. It has its origins in European weather lore, where a badger, or a sacred bear, acts as the prognosticator of the future weather and the turning of the seasons. It has similarities to the pagan festival, and forgive me, I will no doubt butcher this word, Imolc, which is what is known as one of the cross-quarter days of the neo-pagan Celtic calendar year. So let me explain that. If you picture the year as a circle, and you divide that circle into four equal parts with one vertical line running from top to bottom and the other one from left and right so that both lines meet in the center, at this point you have a circle with a cross in it. At the top, 12 o'clock, is the Yule, which corresponds with the winter solstice, variously December 20th through the 23rd. And at the 3 o'clock precision is Ostara, the vernal equinox, variously March 19th through the 22nd. And at 6 o'clock on this is midsummer, the summer solstice, June 19th through the 23rd. And at 9 o'clock, the autumnal equinox. So those are the phases of the sun. If you then draw two more lines bisecting the circle in an X, you get four new points created on the circle, and these are known as the cross-quarter days. So I made a little drawing for those who can't visualize and have exceptionally good eyesight. So circle, cross, cross-quarter. So here's the Yule, here's Ostara, and here we are today, Groundhog Day, or Imolc. Halfway between the Yule and the start of spring. So there's Groundhog Day, February 2nd, halfway between the Yule and Ostara, or to use the Christian references, halfway between Christmas and Easter. Now, depending on where you live in the world and the weather patterns of the year, you might want to make an argument that spring, which has symbolically been thought as the birth of the year, and which we currently define as the quarter of the year between the vernal equinox and the summer solstice, really makes more sense to you as being the time between Groundhog Day and May Day. Your nearby neighbor may politely disagree, but you and your neighbor, instead of simply agreeing to disagree about when spring starts, may pose the question to your local oracle, in this case, a divinely inspired rodent, the groundhog. So I have an example of the groundhog there on the altar. He doesn't always wear the hat. The groundhog will then predict, through divine inspiration, when spring starts by coming out on Groundhog Day and either seeing his shadow or not. If there's a shadow, spring won't start until the vernal equinox. Problem solved. Groundhog Day, as we all know, is a wildly popular holiday, right up there with Festivus, Towel Day, and the Pastafarian International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Okay, that last statement was entirely ironic. Groundhog Day is a fairly well-known, but not very celebrated day. That is, not as many people celebrate it as, say, the Super Bowl or Christmas. However, The town of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, is celebrating their 128th year of Groundhog Day today. And for those of you who don't have time to do the math, they've been celebrating since 1887. And the name of their oracular groundhog in Punxsutawney is Phil. He is said by outside sources to have 39% accuracy in his weather predictions. Now, hold that thought while we take a brief moment to talk about the shape of time. As already mentioned, we often think of time linearly, the past, now, the future, all on a line. However, the line of the year is commonly a circle. For simplicity's sake, a circle of seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, turn, the seasons. We understand the wheel of time. We have a symbol up here. So, now I have to find my place. Encapsulated within a year are further circles of time. For instance, a month is to some extent related to a lunar cycle, so it is the birth and death of the moon. a cycle of birth, death. The moon waxes, the moon wanes. And a week is a seven-day cycle that links in some way back to the creation of the world from the book of Genesis. God takes 6 days to make everything, and on the seventh day he rests. So you can think of every week as a cycle of creation. A day itself is broken into light and dark, hours, minutes, and seconds, with each day repeating the cycle of the hours. A day itself can be a birth-death cycle. We are born each morning, die each night, to be born again the next morning. What this tells us, if nothing else, is that we are culturally drawn to patterns and to symbols, that human beings look for patterns and use them to make sense of the world. We celebrate anniversaries, our birthdays every year, the beginning of a new year, wedding anniversaries. We and the year and our relationships are born again and again. We are comfortable with repetition, with a certain level of sameness. We build cycles. When Santayana talks about the repetition of history, he is talking about how we interpret history itself into cycles. Cycles of war, cycles of building knowledge, such as the ages of man, the Stone Age, the Age of Reason, the Mechanical Age, and so forth. Now hold that thought as we look at the movie Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, the movie, was released in 1993. The movie is set in a fictional version of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, which was created in the actual town of Woodstock, Illinois, just 65.8 miles away from Heartland. For those of you who have not seen the movie or don't clearly remember it, here's a synopsis. An egocentric TV meteorologist named Phil Connors, his news producer Rita, and cameraman Larry are sent from a Pittsburgh television station to Punxsutawney to cover the annual Groundhog Day festivities. Phil, who is tired of this assignment because he's done it before, gives a lackluster report. Due to a blizzard, which Phil had predicted would miss the town, he and the crew are forced to stay in Punxsutawney overnight. When Phil wakes up the next morning, he discovers that it is Groundhog Day again, as the day unfolds the same way it had before. Although he is aware of the repetition of the day, everyone else is reliving Groundhog Day as if it is, as if it is their first time. Phil is able to remember each repetition of the day while no one else is. In short, Phil is caught in a single day time loop in which only he has a historical memory of the repetition. He is stuck. Let's pause for a moment there. If you were caught in a time loop, what would you do? Perhaps we should remove the if from that. As each of us lives our lives, we find ourselves settling into particular patterns of behavior. After all, we have a strong comfort factor with cyclical time. If we don't like a cycle we have fallen into, a rut, the same old, how do we get out of it? Or to ask it another way, how do we get reborn? Or to ask it yet another way, how do we activate the engine of the time machine that each of us is and forward ourselves to another day? The movie Groundhog Day is quite clever and funny in its presentation. Within the frame of the movie, we get to be Phil and see a situation, experience it with him, try to solve the mystery. Since Phil is the only person in the repetition of Groundhog Day who has memory of each repetition, he is the only person who can introduce new action. That is, if he behaves differently, he can cause the others around him to behave differently. He can cause ripples of new behaviors. Initially, after getting over the strangeness of the phenomena, Phil takes advantage of the days to build information about the world he is stuck in. He does this the way one would explore a computer world. He gathers information about the people, and then he plays that world like a computer game in which there are no long-term consequences to himself, because regardless of what happens, he will wake up the next morning and start the day over. He comes to see himself as a god. We find him seducing beautiful women, stealing money, smoking and eating excessively, experiencing a police chase, kidnapping Punxsutawney Phil. As the initial thrill of this behavior wears off, he goes to the extremes of killing himself in different ways. But each day, he just wakes up again. The one thing that he tries to do and is always unsuccessful in is to seduce Rita. For those of you who are fascinated by fairy tales and riddles, the movie portrays a man under a spell or curse. But like all spells and curses, we believe there is a solution to it, whether it be a kiss from a prince or a touch from a magic feather. The movie leads us to ask how Phil can save himself. What change does he have to make to win Rita and escape the loop of time? Something like Santayana's statement, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," is at play here. But Phil can remember the past. So what is it that he is missing? Part of the fascination people have for this film is the sense in which Phil has a spiritual problem, not a physical one. He is trapped by his own behavior, and the universe is demanding he behave differently, or he will remain stuck on a single day. To me, the core of Phil's issue at bottom is his egocentricity. Everything he does is to get something for himself, not to give something. He treats the people in the place he is in as objects. He lacks what Martin Buber calls an I-thou relationship with anyone and anything. He is, in the terms of existential philosophers, inauthentic. It is not until Phil quits trying to manipulate Rita into falling for him and instead opens himself up to her and asks her what she wants that he begins to think about things differently. When Rita lists the things she wants in a man, humbleness, intelligence, kindness, gentleness, he comes to realize that he must approach the world not as a manipulator for his own pleasure, but as a benefactor. Most of what Rita wants is not something he can produce himself, but something other people have to see in him. As with the earlier sequences and variations on misbehavior, even in this circumscribed world that repeats a single day, Phil is able to apply his knowledge to become a benefactor to various individuals, to the town itself, and to educate himself. Phil performs heroic services. For example, he performs the Heimlich maneuver on a choking man. He saves a boy who falls from a tree. And although he is unable to keep an elderly homeless man from dying, he tries repeatedly, and we can assume in some way he learns that there are things beyond his control which he simply must come to accept. Using his single day over and over again, Phil learns to play jazz piano, speak French, sculpt ice, memorize the life story of almost everybody in the town, and in that effort, he comes to like the people in the town, and they come to like him. This, to me, is the key event. Whereas Santayana speaks of being condemned to repeat events, Phil is able to repeat events and like them. In 1942, Albert Camus published an essay called The Myth of Sisyphus. From Greek mythology, Sisyphus is a man who is condemned to roll a rock up a hill, only to have it roll down again, thus requiring him to repeat the task endlessly. Camus compared the absurdity of this activity to what he saw as the absurdity of our own lives, our endless work and repetition. But Camus proposed a solution that depends finally only on us. Suppose that the struggle of repeating an endless task is enough to fill our hearts. Suppose that Sisyphus, in an eternity of repetitions, is happy. I think the movie Groundhog Day, like the day itself, bears repeating. So take some time to go out again, and maybe again, and again, and see what it says to you. Start a dialogue with it, and see where it goes. I think we'll skip the polylogue here in the service today. We can talk after the service, if you would like. So we are going to proceed. Yep.
We extinguish the chalice. Oh boy, the chalice here
that it may glow gently in our hearts. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn, number 1074, in the teal hymnal called Turn the World Around. And please remain standing for the benediction.
Thank you. where was mine? Yeah, I've never seen red. I've only seen these two. I bought one for a friend. It was in the wrong department at Kmart and marked way down, and I didn't need a third one. But I figure I'll find a good home.